Well, they say when you speak before a meal, you're speaking to an audience, and when you speak after a meal, you are speaking to a jury. So I am going to drive home one verse and one major thought, and the lesson will be abbreviated, and we can go and get our rest and get our afternoon naps or whatever you'd like to do with the rest of your Sunday afternoon. I have enjoyed being here, and I'm honored to have this one last little opportunity to give you guys some homework before you leave. We said in the first message that we want you back here when we meet again. I'll give you some homework until we meet again, and then we will wrap it up for the day. So a famous business executive stood in front of lights and cameras and reporters, and he was ready to reveal the secret that had made him a multimillionaire, self-made in life. He was retiring. He was retiring early. He had made his fortune and was going to enjoy the rest of his life. He had never talked about how he built this great empire that he built, but now he was ready to talk, and the world was certainly ready to listen. And so as the cameras flashed and rolled, he started to talk, and he said, "The secret to my success in business and in life is summed up in one simple three-word slogan, and those words are, and then some." He said, "I just noticed early in life that there is a fundamental difference between those who just kind of get by and those who really achieve something and do something big with their life. And the difference is those who achieve, those who do, are willing to do what is expected of them and what is demanded of them. And above and beyond that, they are willing to do a little bit more." He said, "I wasn't the best or the brightest of anything, but I took that principle with me, that and then some principle, to school. And so when I got to school, I did everything my teachers asked me to do, and then some. If they said, read the chapter, I'd read it twice and outline it. If they said, write a paper that was 5 pages, I'd write a paper 7 pages and double the sources they asked for. And I just, whatever they asked, I did it in a little bit more, graduated near the top of my class, got a scholarship to college. I took that same principle and then some to college. Wasn't the brightest, wasn't the best, but I did everything my professors asked me to do in college. And then some. Again, graduated near the top of my class. Got out and started at the bottom of the corporate ladder like everybody does. But when I started the new job, I did everything my bosses and managers asked me to do, and then some. I was the first one there. I did the work of other people and didn't complain. I was the last one to leave. Before you know it, I was being promoted. I was manager and vice president and president and then CEO and then CEO over several companies. And here I am, all thanks to 3 words, and then some." Isn't that a great idea? I wonder where he got an idea like that. Was it Stephen Covey, or was it Dale Carnegie, or was it Anthony Robbins? I wonder which business guru taught him that and then some principle. But some of you know, don't you? That principle goes back long before any kind of modern business guru. That principle goes back to the life and the teaching of Jesus Christ. Jesus said it this way, in Matthew 5:41, "Whoever compels you to go a mile, go with him too." Now, a little boy was asked to memorize that verse and recite it in Bible class, Matthew 5:41. And he memorized it from that old King James Version, which says, "If someone compels thee to go a mile, go with him by train." That's how he read it, at least. So, no, that's not it. So let's be sure we get the background right. You know that the Jews were under Rome at the time of Jesus, right? Rome had conquered Israel. Rome was occupying Israel. Israel could self-govern a little, but they also had to follow all of these Roman laws that Rome wanted them to follow. Rome had this big doorway-like thing. It was called a Roman yoke. And when they took over a city or a town or a province, all of the members had to come out and walk underneath that Roman yoke. And that was a symbol that we're going to keep those little Roman rules and the big ones too, but we're going to be compliant to Rome. And one of those Roman rules that the Jews had to follow was this. if a Jew was asked by a Roman official to carry any kind of equipment, the Jew had to do it, and he had to do it, or she had to do it for 1 mile. It didn't matter what the Jew had going on. It didn't matter how busy they were. If a Roman official said, "Hey, you come and carry this heavy backpack for me," they had to do it. Roman law said so. But they only had to go 1 mile. And so the Jews were staunch about doing it only 1 mile. In fact, the Jew would go in front of his house, and he would measure off 1 mile that way down the road and drive a stake in the ground. Come back home, walk a mile that way, drive a stake in the ground. So he would know if he got called by that Roman soldier to carry that heavy Roman backpack, that he would go 1 mile and not a step further. And that was the Jew's attitude. And Jesus knows that Roman law and how much the Jews hate it. And so he's teaching in the Sermon on the Mount, and he's giving out all of this eloquence and this brilliance. And then he says, whoever compels you to go a mile, go with him too. And can you imagine how the crowd ruffled at that? Are you crazy, Jesus? Volunteer to go a mile? An extra mile? But folks, Jesus is using that obnoxious Roman law to be the carrier of a great truth. And here it is. Those who make the most out of life and those who get the most out of life are those who are willing to do what is expected of them, and above and beyond, they're willing to do a little bit more. Think about the 1 mile Jew, the typical Jew. He's out, let's say, plowing in his field, and he's out there working and trying to get a lot of work done before dark, and he senses somebody looking at him from the road, and he looks over, and it's that Roman soldier giving him this, "Come here." And that Jew says, "This is going to ruin my day. It's going to keep me from getting the work done I need to do." And so he stomps across that field kicking up dust, and he climbs over the fence, and he halfway picks up that backpack and halfway drags it, and they start walking, and they walk a mile, but it seems like 10 miles, and that Jew is muttering under his breath the whole way, and he is hating this Roman soldier more and more with every step. And finally, he gets to that stake that he put in the ground. "Finally, I get to this mile." And so he slams that backpack down at that 1 mile marker, and he looks at that Roman soldier. He said, "I hate you. I hate everything about you. I hate everything you represent. And you have ruined my day today." And he goes stomping back home. He's in too bad a mood to finish up his work, so he just goes in the house. And he kicks his dog, and he fusses at his children, and he's impatient with his wife. Why? Because he had to go 1 mile today. Now, think about the Jew Jesus is talking about. Think about the 2 mile Jew. He's working in that same field, plowing that same garden, and he senses somebody looking at him, and he looks, and it's the Roman soldier giving him that. And he eases his plow down, and he jogs lightly across the field, and he hops over the fence, and he picks up that backpack and puts it on his back, and they start walking. And after a few steps, he starts talking to the Roman soldier. So, how are you? Tell me about your family. Where are you from? Roman soldier is taken back. This has never happened before, but they start talking. And the Jew is talking, and he's listening, and he's sharing, and they walk, and they get to that mile marker, and the Jew keeps going. And they keep talking, and they're relating, and they're enjoying the day, and they get so far finally that they're 2 miles down the road. And finally, the Roman soldier says, "You know, I'm taking advantage of you. The law says you just have to go a mile. We passed that way back there. If you'll just give me my pack, I'll go on and thank you for what you did." And the Jew says, "Well, it's really no problem, but okay." He gives the backpack back to the Roman soldier, turns to start to walk away, and the soldier says, "Hey, I want you to know something. You've changed my attitude about Jews. And I want you to know that if you ever get to Rome, I want you to look me up, and I've got a place for you to stay, and I've got a family for you to meet." And that two-mile Jew jogs home, and he hops over the fence, and he finishes his work, and he gets to his house, and he pets his dog, and he loves on his children, and he kisses his wife on the cheek, and he enjoys his evening. Why? Because he got to go the extra mile today. And folks, Jesus says, yes, there's that much of a contrast. The first mile is the law mile, and if that's all you're going to do, you're going to hate it. But the second mile is the love mile, and if you'll just do it, if you'll just be willing to do what the law demands and then above and beyond do more, you won't believe how it will change your life for the good. Your homework is be an extra miler. Would you take that and then some principle and apply it these next few days to your faith, to your family, to your friendships? Will you do what is expected and then a little more? I heard about a couple that practiced this, and we'll close with this, but there was a marriage and it was falling apart. And a woman went to the lawyer, the local lawyer in a small town, and she said to the lawyer, I want a divorce. I want you to draw up the paperwork for me. The lawyer knew the lady and knew her husband and knew that the marriage wasn't doomed. It just needed something to kind of spark it. And so he said to the lady, I tell you what, I'm going to tell you to do something here for a little bit, and if you will do it, I will give you your divorce absolutely free. I won't charge you a penny if you'll do what I'm asking you to do first. She said, look, I live with the meanest, most low-down, good-for-nothing man on the face of this earth. I'm not interested in whatever proposition you have. And he said, well, just think about you're getting this divorce for free. He said, okay, let me hear what you got to say. Lawyer says, I want you to go home, and for a period of 6 weeks, I want you to treat your husband like royalty. I want you to kill him with kindness, okay, for 6 weeks. And if you do that and you come back to my office, I'll have it all ready for you. You'll just sign, and that'll be it. And she said, there's no way I'm going to go home and kill my husband with kindness. I can't stand him. And the lawyer said, well, just think about how good it's going to feel to build him up and butter him up for 6 weeks and just drop him just like that at the end of it and serve him those papers. And she said, you know, since you said it that way, she decided to do it. 6 weeks later, she walks back in the lawyer's office. He sees her. He recognizes her. He reaches into his desk and pulls out some paperwork. It's all drawn up. Ma'am, all you got to do is sign here and here. And she said, well, wait a second. And he said, ma'am, I really don't have time to wait a second. I've got paying customers. I'm doing you for free, so if you'll just sign. And she said, what I'm trying to say is I don't want a divorce. And the lawyer said, but you're married to the meanest, most low-down, good-for-nothing man on the face of the earth. She said, you better watch what you say about my husband. He's like, what happened? And she said, I went home, and I was determined to follow the plan just as you drew it up. And so the very first day he comes home from work, and I meet him at the front door. And I'm wearing a dress that I know he likes, and I'm wearing the perfume that I know he likes, and I've got the newspaper, and I hand it to him, and I give him a little peck on the cheek, and I say, you sit right down there in the recliner and take it easy, and I've got your favorite meal, and it'll be ready in just a few minutes. You just relax to then. And she said, my husband actually stepped back and looked at the house number to be sure he's at the right house. She said, I poured it on. I mean, I poured it on. I stopped nagging him about things, and before you know it, he was doing things around the house. He would take out the garbage without me pointing the gun at him. She said, I really had been pouring on this love and, you know, killing him with kindness for a couple of weeks. And she looked at that lawyer dumbfounded. She said, and he, after a couple of weeks, asked me to go out on a date. And she said, you don't understand. We don't date. The last time we both left the house together at the same time was when it was on fire. I mean, we don't go out, but he asked me out. And we went out to a nice restaurant, and we ate, and we talked, and we talked about our past, and we talked about our present, and we talked about our future and our plans and our hopes and our dreams. And somewhere along the way, we fell in love again. How does that happen? It happens when one person in this case says, you know what, I'm going to take the and then some principle and I'm going to apply it to my marriage and my family. Not because he deserves it, not even because I really feel like it, but because Jesus said it is so. She went the extra mile and it made all the difference in that marriage. So there is your assignment. You can find the best way to apply it for you, but let me have you think about your faith, your family, and your friends. How can you go the extra mile this next week? God certainly went the extra mile for us, didn't he? The Bible says, while we were yet sinners, Christ died for us. It's not that we earned it. It's not that we deserved it. It's not that we said, hey, there's a really good reason that you should send Jesus down here to die for us. None of that. God just says, if I expect you to do it, I'll do it. And I'm going the extra mile to offer you salvation. Have you said thank you? Have you accepted what Jesus did for you on the cross? He took your place. He was separated from the Father. Remember we said that this morning, my God, why have you forsaken me? He was separate from the Father, so you will never have to be. You will never have to spend one moment separated from God the Father because of what Jesus offers you if you'll accept it. So we offer you the invitation. It's open 24/7, as you know, but this is a convenient time to say once more, if you want to become a baptized believer, we're here to help you with that. If you have wandered away and you need to find your way back home, God is looking for you and ready to welcome you, and so is this congregation. So come right now if you have any need, as together we stand and as we sing to encourage you.